All right, here we go. Carl Anthony Towns, you will know this trade well, my friend. Bid farewell to the Timberwolves organization, reading from ESPN in Minnesota in a social media post. Minutes after his trade to the Knicks became official and paved the way for him to join his new teammates in training camp. To the Timberwolves family, 9 years ago, I arrived in Minnesota as a young man with a dream. I did not know that this place would become my home and its people would love become my family. Your love, support, and unwavering loyalty has fueled my journey and inspired me to be the best player I could be. Said the four-time All-Star, you'll always hold a special place in my heart. Thank you for everything. So, give me your thoughts. You're going to know this trade as well as anyone.
I'm really trying hard to look at the basketball side of this and not the vibes side of this because it's hard for me to separate it out, Ed.
I know.
I had the opportunity last year, or not last year, earlier this year, to go to games one and two of the Knicks-Pacers series as a fan. And those were two of the greatest sporting experiences of my life. Everything about that team was fun to be around, even as they kept getting hurt by injuries and struggling to be able to keep it up and ultimately losing to the Pacers. So I look at it in a basketball sense and I say, putting a big man who can shoot into that offense is going to be what supercharges it. Like, the starting five for the Knicks is as good as most starting fives in the league, if not the best. And I really struggle to say those sorts of things about a team that I worry about. But man, oh man, breaking up what they had last year feels scary. It's just scary because it looked like it was something that is the number two seed. They were going to have the ability to make a run as far as their, I guess, talent level would let them. And that talent level probably stopped at beating Boston. And I'll give credit to Matt Moore from Action Network for this. He's the one who identified at first, everything the Knicks are doing is designed to try to beat Boston. And I think it's smart because ultimately, if the Knicks think they're the number two, number three team in the East, then you know that to get to the finals, you're probably going to see Boston in the conference finals, and you have to be able to get past them. And you don't worry about what the matchup is in the NBA finals, because then you're in the NBA finals. So that would be fantastic if you get that far. But giving up Dante DiVincenzo is really tough for me. I don't know how Julius Randle is going to fit into this team, but Karl Anthony Towns and the way he shoots, and if Tom Thibodeau really believes that he can turn Karl Anthony Towns into the kind of defensive player that he gave up in those other two guys, then I think that the Knicks are going to be in a good spot.
We had JVT in the other day talking to NBA, and we brought up the Knicks, and he talked about Tibbs possibly wearing out the starters over the course of the year. Is there truth to that? Does this happen, and are you worried about that on a year-to-year basis?
Oh, you have to be worried about it. It's what Tom Thibodeau has done his entire career. He relies on a very, very tight group. You know, if his rotation goes eight or nine deep, that's deep for Tom Thibodeau, and you just thinned out the bench by trading from depth, right? Both Julius Randle and Dante DiVincenzo were going to be in your top six players. So now you're going to have to figure out where the rest of those minutes come from. And the reason that I feel like maybe this team can get by is that you're going to be relying on a younger guy to fill a lot of those minutes in Deuce McBride. And that, to me, makes me think, all right, at least for a year or two, you can probably get by on this. And really, that's the window for this team. The Knicks believe that they can win a championship this year. And I have all sorts of knots in my stomach even when I say that, not feeling uncomfortable. Can you get a knot from not being uncomfortable? Because like, that's how I feel right now.
Man, you know, that's a great question.
Dolphins wide receiver Tyreek Hill wants to remain with the team. He reaffirmed Wednesday, according to ESPN, despite a frustrating start to the season and a social media buzz about a potential trade. He did not speak with the media after Monday's game, as some speculation bubbled about the viability of a trade with the Kansas City Chiefs. He did speak at his locker Wednesday after the practice and said he was committed to the Dolphins organization. I'm focused on right here, right now. We've got a beautiful team here, and I want to be part of it. We've got a great situation here. My family loves it. I enjoy it. The weather's great. The fans are great. So we've got a beautiful situation. We all know in the NFL is a business. Whatever happens, happens. I'd love to be here. Believe this, and here's the other thing. Any chance that Kansas City can get this guy back, that would be, I mean, I think Patrick Mahomes would be lining up for that.
Oh, I mean, of course. But I also think if you, you know, and I'll give Bill Barnwell credit for this because he laid this out in his discussion of whether the Chiefs will be involved in a Davante Adams trade. He said, look, I don't see where the Kansas City Chiefs are going to go the star receiver route. They seem to be comfortable spreading the ball around, and that would be where you go with this team, I think, in the future, because you already saw it work once. They won the Super Bowl last year, and they didn't really have a star receiver. So I don't think it's about the Chiefs. I honestly feel like Tyreek Hill, you know, look, we all know Tyreek Hill's history. We've all heard the phone call, right? Like, you know, there are some uncomfortable things in the personal history of Tyreek Hill. Professionally, right, on the field, look, the right guy's pretty much done it the way that you're supposed to do it. Like, he didn't go looking for a trade, right? He was not trying to get out of Kansas City. He wanted his contract, and they couldn't pay him and Kelce and Patrick Mahomes and an offensive line. So a choice had to be made, and things looked wonderful when he first got to Miami. That offense was completely unstoppable. So he handled the police situation this year, I think, as well as you could expect him to handle it after. And then I also feel like this organization can't be making rash decisions right now. They went all in to try to win, and they had the situation turn for the worse with Tua Tagovailoa. There's just nothing you can do.
What do you think? I mean, OBJ, Odell Beckham Jr., is supposed to practice with the team this week for the first time since signing with the team in May, according to ESPN. After starting the regular season on the physically unable to perform list with an undisclosed injury, Beckham will have to be added to the team's active roster within 21 days or reverted back to IL. Can he help them? He signed a one-year, $3 million contract with incentives up to $8.25 million. When you talk about this whole Tyreek Hill situation, how much can Beckham help them, if at all?
We can't be relying on Odell Beckham at this stage of his career, right? He's 31 years old. He has a lengthy, lengthy injury history. I just don't see where this is a guy who's going to put you anywhere close to over the top. You go look at last year for Odell Beckham Jr., it really wasn't all that spectacular, you know, for the Baltimore Ravens. It couldn't stay healthy. 14 games, 35 catches on 64 targets. Like, yeah, it's better than running a rookie out there, but right, does it really help this Dolphins team with who they're going to have at quarterback, right? It's whether it's Snoop Huntley or Skylar Thompson. I mean, unless we see Tua Tagovailoa come back, I don't think you can have any expectations for this Dolphins team.
I'm out.
The Lakers are enjoying competition between LeBron and Bronny at practice, according to ESPN. Following the first day of camp, LeBron James said there's nothing left for him to prove. Four titles, four MVPs, most points in history, everything else is extra credit, he said. He might have been overlooking a new basketball opportunity, and that's playing with Bronny. Anthony Davis is fantastic to be able to hear and witness in practice. Bronny hit a three over him today. Everybody was talking smack in Bronny's favor. Then LeBron came down and just bullied somebody, just took it on the defender. I forgot who it was and got a layup. Bronny came down and hit another three, I think, over Austin Reeves, and Bron wanted the ball. So you can see, even though they weren't matched up, the competition is there, and that's what we love to see. I know you and I have talked about it in the past. Have you changed your mind on how good Bronny might be? And we talked about it with JVT the other day. Would it be, as Magic Johnson suggested, would it be best if he just played in the G League the whole year? Or do we have to give the kid some credit in terms of how he's going to develop and see this first before you make that kind of determination on how he's really going to be?
First of all, Ed, that quote you just read from Anthony Davis, Bronny hit a three over him today. Everyone was talking smack in Bronny's favor. Then Bron came down and just bullied somebody, just took it out on the defender. If I'm the rest of the Lakers, first of all, I'm saying, whoa, 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 hey, what did I do wrong here?
Right.
I'm just living. I'm just trying to live out here, and you got this kid out here who's going to make Bron come down and put his shoulder through me? No, thank you. But that being said, whose development are we talking about here when we talk about what's best for the Los Angeles Lakers? Are we talking about Bronny James and trying to make him an NBA player? Or if Bronny James can be a motivating factor for LeBron James, who's saying he doesn't have anything left to prove, well, then maybe there is a place for Bronny James,
right,
on the roster. Maybe it is better for him to be around. Maybe maybe showing his son in person every day who he can be. Maybe that's what you want to see. I don't know. Interesting.
I love this this other story. I guess Bronny gave up a bucket to LeBron on the baseline, and Bronny said he was out of bounds. He said he spun baseline and went up and under. I jumped on the strong side of the backboard, but the refs were reffing missed when he stepped on the line. I got that stop. I believe I got that stop. It is what it is. He's in year whatever he is. He's going to get that call. LeBron didn't argue with Bronny's replay review. He said a step footage and I stepped out of bounds, LeBron said. So, I mean, if that's the case, then good defense by him, but it's always better offense by me. I don't know. I think this stuff is kind of cool to watch these guys go back and forth and to have these kind of stories coming out of camp. I don't know how good Bronny's going to be. I don't know if he should be in the G League. We'll have to see. But I do look forward to it. I think everyone is fascinated to see how they play together. JVT has made the prediction that Bronny James will start opening night, even though Redick said he's going to go with the starters from last year. And I don't know. I want to watch it. It's one of those things in sports, you know, you don't really have a rooting interest, but you want to watch because it's fascinating. And I don't know where you stand on it, but I really want to watch him play just to see how good he can be, and or if not, if he's over his head.
What we know about Bronny James at this point is that there is not a single NBA evaluator who says he's going to be what his father is. And that's fine. Maybe he turns out to be 85-90% of him. I don't think that's the high ceiling. I think the ceiling's probably a little lower than that.
Yeah.
But we as NBA fans, we just want to see the story, right? We just want to see what's fun. And what's fun for us would be reliving Ken Griffey Sr. and Ken Griffey Jr. being on the same team. And what's fun for us would be Bronny James and LeBron playing together. Do we get that? We probably get it at some point. What's best for Bronny James in the long run is probably going and playing in the G League for a while and going, just getting the time back that he lost with the heart issue.
Yes.
Right? That's really what the kid needs more than anything else right now. But as fans, is that what we want? Probably not.
Yeah, great question. Yeah, again, great question.
So Texas State, we know what happened with the Mountain West Conference. UNLV stayed, Air Force stayed. They have to go get more full-time members to be considered a conference. But Texas State, this week, their talks with the Mountain West Conference have ended, and the school informed the Sun Belt that it's going to stay. You and I haven't talked about UNLV staying, the bag of money they got to stay. They do have a deficit out there that is heavy in terms of the deficit in the athletic department. Maybe that had something to do with it. Maybe not. I think it would probably have to. But a school like Texas State, it's interesting. It's in, obviously, the Lone Star State, the big football state. They're in the Sun Belt. I don't know what would entice them to stay in the Sun Belt other than they are like this rising team in Texas. They're putting a lot of money into their athletic department. Are these schools having second thoughts because maybe a Power Four one day will come and get them and they say, why do we have to move conferences now? Because I thought Texas State would be a good fit for the Mountain West, and they said no. Pac-12 was also interested in Texas State, by the way, sources told ESPN's Pete Thamel. I was surprised. The athletic director, the recent interest shown in Texas State and his presence across college athletics speaks volumes about the university and work our staff and student-athletes have done to build the Bobcat brand nationally. After preliminary discussions with an interested conference, meaning the Mountain West, we decided to make a change at this time. Let me ask you one thing first. What did you think about the UNLV staying in the Mountain West and not going to the Pac-12?
You know, it's been a long time since we could say this about UNLV from an administration standpoint. I think they nailed this. I think they did the absolute best job that they could have. Getting that level of bag to stay in the Mountain West, going from a Mountain West in which it was Boise State and everybody else, and then Boise State and San Diego State and everybody else, going from that to becoming one of the marquee programs in the conference and getting the money that goes along with being one of the marquee programs in the conference, and frankly, a program and a conference that might be better than what's going to be over in the Pac-12, top to bottom, it might not be a worse conference. You were just kind of going from number five to number five, and you got a bunch of money to do it. Good on UNLV.
Yeah. And the other thing I liked about it, about the deal supposedly, was there's a clause, And look, we don't know what the future holds. We don't know what the power fours are going to want to do. Will the SEC and Big Ten just split off? Who knows? It's predictions there, and they'll just take a certain amount of teams, and everyone else will be reverted down to like a D2 FCS level. But if that doesn't happen soon, we don't know what the other conferences are going to think. And I think UNLV was smart to get this clause because, you know, you've always heard about the Big 12 in the background. You know, would they want UNLV? Would they want to come to Las Vegas? They had their football media day here. The commissioner told me, I've always wanted to be in Las Vegas. I think that clause was really smart to get with no exit fee if the Big 12 or someone else came calling.
I'm telling you, top to bottom, UNLV's administration got this right. And you're right. I hadn't even mentioned the ability to still have an out. And that's the part that surprised me about Texas State. If you had said Texas State turned down the Mountain West, I would have said, well, the Pac-12 is coming.
Right.
Right. And they would rather be in the Pac. But the fact that they've recommitted to the old Fun Belt, like, I'm not really totally getting what the long-term play is there, because what's the best program there? Coastal Carolina? Right?
Right.
Probably Coastal Carolina. Maybe App State. Maybe Marshall. Like, I see where there are some teams that are kind of on the level of where Texas State is trying to get, but I don't know. Maybe the money deal just wasn't right for them coming to the Mountain West, and they'll just take their time and see what's next. And maybe that's not what the boosters wanted. So, you know, for UNLV to be in the spot they're in now, Ed, this was the dream Jim Livengood probably had outside of a Pac-12 future of, you know, what the Pac-12 used to be. But UNLV having a not only competitive but ranked football program and being respected by the Mountain West Conference at that level, it's what the last three athletic directors have wanted. Yeah. For UNLV, they took their position, they used the timing, they got the best deal that they could out of it, and I think UNLV's long-term future, and we heard about that deficit they're dealing with right now, but the right. long-term future is good for the Rebels.
When we come back, we'll compare two rookie quarterbacks, one really good and one not so much. Ryan Dempster, Major League player for a long time and World Series champion at 8:30, all your Major League Baseball questions, and Jason Fitz at 9 on the Raiders, J.R. Starkus with his regular stop by on Thursdays at 9:30. Bad, Bo Nix. Good, Mr. Daniels, Jaden Daniels out of Washington. So let's go with Nix first. Couldn't be worse. Jeff Erickson had him the last in his rankings this week. Sean Payton just won't let it go, Adam. You're still looking at a perfect pitcher, the perfect game. I know the Shangri-La doesn't exist, but the execution, the details still have to get better with younger players. Nix had two completions this season of more than 30 yards, but Payton remains steadfast. I've said this before, if everyone else can just paint the right pitcher, then you truly get to evaluate and watch a really good quarterback. Nix threw for only 60 yards and 12 of 25 passing in a rainy day over the Jets, the 10-9 win. After going 7, this is a great stat, 7 of 15 for minus 7 in the first half, which is almost impossible, I think. He did throw his first touchdown, 8-yarder to Cortland Sutton. Sutton gave him the ball after the game. Said, you take it. It's your first touchdown pass. But what are we doing here? Why is Payton going to the wall and so steadfast? I know it's his decision. I know it's early. But the numbers here, and we're about to get some text from the Bo Nix fans out on our text line, the numbers are just awful with this guy.
Oh, if you're going to text in about Bo Nix, then here's what you need to text. We want to text you. Text us three numbers. Text us 12, 25, and 60, because he went 12 for 25 for 60 yards against the Jets. Okay? If you want to text us another number about Bo Nix, then I suggest you go ahead and text us about his average yards per attempt. That's 4.8. That's second to last in football this year. Let's not start. So you want to answer the question, Ed? Here's an answer to your question. Sean Payton is going this hard to the wall about Bo Nix because this is Sean Payton's entire legacy. Because if Bo Nix doesn't pan out, then the legacy of Sean Payton offensive guru goes completely into the tank. Because at that point, we look and say it was all Drew Brees.
Right.
Because the idea is Sean Payton and Drew Brees had this great offensive connection in New Orleans. They won a Super Bowl, etc. Well, it seems a whole lot more like it was Drew Brees at this point than it was Sean Payton. Sean Payton still has time. to prove that to be wrong. But here's the part I really didn't like, Ed, coming out of this. We saw Bo Nix give a snippy quote about one of his interceptions when the Broncos had started 0-2. So Sean Payton kind of gave him a little bit of an excuse and said, all right, well, it was a lot to do with the weather in New York on Sunday. It impacted both quarterbacks and blah, blah, blah. Here was Bo Nix's answer talking about the situation. Sunday's tough to evaluate because it was a sloppy game, Nix said. A lot of rain, a lot of things weather affected, but it's a lot better watching it knowing you won it. The last time we had a chance to really get around and spin it, and we did a really good job against Tampa Bay in week 3. Hopefully we continue to improve on that, and I think I will. So you're telling us that the weather needs to be good for you to be a good quarterback.
To be good.
Right. You have to, right. So you have to be in good weather to be a good quarterback, because I think playing in Denver freaking Colorado,
yes, I was just going to say
that,
could
be a challenge for you.
About a month from now, let's see what he thinks about the weather.
Let's find out. Does he think the weather is going to be perfect in Denver for the rest of the year? And it's also crazy because where did you play last year, buddy? You played at Oregon.
And Eugene.
You played in one of the rainiest environments anywhere. Here's a good stat on Bo Nix if you want to understand what's going to make him successful and what's not going to make him successful. The entire offense has to be built to what he does well, because last year, 2023, Ed, you want to take a guess at this? How many of Bo Nix's passes were thrown behind the line of scrimmage?
Well, given he was minus 7 yards in the first half on about 10 complete or 10 attempts, I would think a lot.
Yeah. So last year at Oregon, 37% of his passes were behind the line of scrimmage. You're basically saying that this guy got almost everything out of screen passes and quick hits. And doing that, that's fine. Like, you want to say that that's what you want out of your quarterback, that's fine. But let's not try to convince ourselves that this is a guy who's going to be able to run an NFL offense consistently. He's second to last in PFF grade. He had a couple of games in the preseason where everyone got excited about him throwing against second and third stringers. And now we're seeing what happens against real NFL defenses. So I don't believe in Bo Nix. I'll be fine if you want to come back and cold take me later about this, because this is an opinion I feel confident about, that a guy who made his entire reputation at Oregon throwing the ball behind the line of scrimmage, having to rehab his reputation at Oregon throwing the ball behind the line of scrimmage because he was so bad at Auburn, is not going to be a great NFL quarterback.
Ryan on the text line, he will get better.
He might get better. That doesn't mean he's going to be a competent NFL quarterback.
Right. Real quick, on the other side of things, Jaden Daniels has already set records for highest completion percentage after 4 games of a season. He's also become the first quarterback to complete 85% or more of his passes in 2 consecutive games, ranks 4th in quarterback rating at 73.3. This is the other side of the coin, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's also the expectations of what you get from a number 2 quarterback drafted versus, you know, quarterback drafted in the double digits.
Right.
So that's, you know, it's what you would kind of hope from Jaden Daniels.
He's been good. There's no question about that. And as Danny and I sit here as Cowboy fans, we're not liking any of it. When we come back, World Series champion Ryan Dempster answers all Major League Baseball questions.
You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN Las Vegas.
Follow him on Twitter at Dempster46, host of Off the Mound. It's the 2013 World Series champ, Ryan Dempster, joining us here in the press box. Ryan, we really appreciate the time. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Good. We're doing really well. Okay, let's start with what we've seen so far. Of the two American League wild card series, who surprised you the most? What was the biggest surprise?
I think Kansas City. You know, just the fact that kind of where they were finishing the season, they were stumbling in, you know. And then to go into Baltimore, I was a little bit shocked that Baltimore didn't put up all but one run on the board. So I was just, you know, kind of surprised by the fact that they were able to do it in 2 games. But they've been doing it all year long, and they got the Pasquatch back. Vinny Pascatino came back and kind of sparked that clubhouse, I'm sure. And then they went out there and they performed, and good for them. Quite the turnaround.
On the other side of it, Ryan, with the Tigers and the Astros, you know, we always hear about momentum being as good as the day's starting pitcher. Tarik Skubal was awesome. But then yesterday, A.J. Hinch just said, yeah, I'm gonna piece this together out of the bullpen and make it work. How do you think that worked out for the Tigers? How did they pull off that kind of win yesterday?
Yeah, I think it's really good managing on A.J. Hinch's part. Like, you know, sometimes you see situations where managers want things to be different, so they manage like they have a stat out there, and then in reality, put yourself behind the eight ball. He said it before the series with Skubal and then pitching chaos. And I remember back in 2013 in the ALDS, we were playing against Tampa, and Joe Maddon threw 9 pitchers that day. He started, I believe it was Jeremy Hellickson, and he went like Jamie Wright. I mean, it was just back and forth, righty-lefty matchup, because he knew that if he threw his starting pitcher 2 times around the lineup to us, we were going to just crush him. And we ended up winning the game late, but it was a great strategic move by Joe, and that was 11 years ago. So A.J. Hinch knew what he had, and he knows what he's riding right now, and that's a red-hot bullpen, and good for him for recognizing it and then executing it, and for those guys to go out there and fight back after losing the lead. And then, yeah, they're on something special in Motown right now.
I want to go back a second for the Royals and Bobby Witt Jr. You can't get out of the Kansas City airport without seeing a ton of posters of him and how they've adopted him. We've got people saying in Kansas City he's already the best Royal ever, and which I think is a big jump there, given one name I know you'll come up with in terms of Mr. Brett. So how good is he? What impresses you most about Bobby Witt Jr.?
Respect for the people that came before him, I think, is really amazing. And that's pedigree from a father who played 16 years or 15 years in Major League. When he hears things like best Royal ever, he's going to be the first person to say George Brett.
Right.
He's going to say slow down. The guy behind the dish who's been to the All-Star game 9 times and is going to go to the Hall of Fame. Salvi Perez. Like, that's the thing about Bobby Witt Jr. that impresses me, is how he carries himself. We live in a society today that is look at me, right? What's on my Instagram? What's my latest post? How cool do I look? How much swag can I have? Bobby Witt Jr. says, how hard can I play? How much respect can I have for the people around me? I'm going to play the game hard, right? And you hear that all the time, right? People say, well, why don't they all play the game right? I don't know. It's a good question. It just doesn't get done like that. Sometimes some people are me people, and sometimes people are we people. And when you have a guy as good as he is, it's about us and it's about we, not me. You turn into an icon in a city, which is, when it's all said and done, most likely going to happen.
Ryan, for as long as you were in a major league clubhouse, how do the vets deal with that when a guy comes in with the opposite attitude, right? If it is more of the look at me, like, is it a situation where you need more veterans to be able to kind of show someone like that the right way, or is that not even possible in the more modern MLB clubhouse?
I mean, I think it's possible. I think that it's harder and harder, you know, tell a rookie how to dress now when he comes to the ballpark, and his agent, then he tells his agent calls the front office, and then the front office goes down and says, hey, guys, come on, we can't really be getting on this guy, you know, gonna care about his feelings. Like, yeah, I understand that. I'm not here to crush somebody, or, you know, the days of the hazing, or I never appreciated the, you know, hey, you rookie, do this. Like, I went through that as a rookie. But there's also a little bit of a hierarchy, and that's okay. You should have to earn something. I mean, let's be real honest, for being honest. I think earning getting to the big leagues isn't what it used to be. I think guys get there faster because they have a good few weeks in Double-A, and teams are like, well, he's throwing great, let's bring him up. And then he truly hasn't even earned that, and then they get to the big leagues, be comfortable, and it's just changed, and that's okay. It's not my game anymore. I just think that when you don't have players that kind of monitor that, then you're just going to have average teams. You're going to have teams that don't get their full potential because guys are focused on maybe the wrong thing instead of the most important thing. And when somebody gets on me, first of all, you only get on the guys usually that you care about. And second of all, like, maybe he's right. Maybe the guy who's been here playing for 10 years in the league or 8 years has a little bit of an idea of what it takes to win and what I need to do as a rookie, because just because I was doing the minor leagues doesn't necessarily translate. Just because I do it for a few weeks in the big leagues doesn't translate. So it's refreshing when you see a guy like Bobby Witt Jr. who you don't have to do any of that with. This is a superstar kid who comes up and does all those things. I guarantee if somebody's like, hey, dude, grab the beer for the bus, he's not going, whatever, I'm Bobby Witt Jr. He goes, yeah, cool, what kind do you need? I'll get as much as you need. That's the difference, and that's why I think. And then that's your young example, so then the other young players want to be like that.
Are the Padres the most dangerous team left?
They sure are feeling themselves right now.
Yeah.
I think that, and they have every right to. I think they're really, really good. They made some trades at the trading deadline that really just shored up that bullpen. You know, just getting Tanner Scott, a guy who can close. Now you give yourself two options, because like now when they go face the Dodgers and you need to get out Ohtani and Freeman, you got Tanner Scott versus, you know, somebody else, and you got multiple left-handed options out of the pen. Offensively, they can score as much as anybody. They're playing with great energy, and you know how much they love this series against LA. I want to say Philly's the most dangerous team, but I'm right there with you with San Diego. I think that they are very dangerous. The fact that they just went through a wild card series and they have Dylan Cease going in game one. They didn't even use Dylan Cease. They got the most underrated starter in the big leagues, probably in Michael King. They're a complete package. Now it just comes down, can you execute when the time matters?
As we talk about some of these young guys, Ryan, pitching in the postseason, we saw Reagans be outstanding, Scooble shoved, King shoved, younger pitchers really performing in big moments. What is it like in the postseason that is different than it is in the regular season?
Everything's a little bit brighter. Not just the lights. Everybody, you know, during a regular season, you're going to have these lulls during a game or, you know, after the first hit, and nobody wants to miss the first pitch, right? You're fine going to a regular season game, and I'll get there in the second, it's fine. You know, people leave work a little bit earlier, so the stands are packed from pitch number one. People don't like to leave their seats. They don't like to go up and get to the concessions if they don't have to, because they don't want to miss the action because it's playoff time. All the teams are better. You now have, you know, at the beginning of the playoffs, you have the best 12 teams going, usually. You know, somebody might not necessarily be the hottest, but they earn the right to be there. So you weed out the lesser teams, which means you weed out the lesser talent, the players who can't execute as much. So you're facing better pitching, better hitting, and you're getting everybody's best bolt on everything. It's high intensity. You know, one play, one drop ball, one don't turn the double play, one not field the bunt and get the guy out. One walk with two outs can cost you your series. And I've witnessed it firsthand from my own personal experience of struggling in a playoff start to being on a team that was successful and won the World Series because we did that. So everything is just higher intensity with better players and better teams.
Knowing the game as well as you do, can we put Ohtani in perspective this year?
You know what's crazy? I sit there and I look what he's done. Like, and he was trying hard. He almost got to 60-60, which was crazy. But you know, the power speed combination, and then you think, man, we forget sometimes that this guy is going to pitch again. So I think it's, you know, just it's hard to put into perspective that what he was able to go out there and do, play every day. At the top of the lineup. When you see this guy in person, I think that's what's so amazing, is that he's not far off from being the size of Aaron Judge. Like, he is a spectacle. And then to see him run like a gazelle, personally, if he comes back and I had a say and he was cool with it, I'd put him in the outfield, and then when we're winning the game after 8 innings, I'd bring him in to close. I think it's an easier way to keep his arm healthy. I think that it's less strain than starting pitching and stuff like that, because I do worry about that again. If you lose his, you know, arm to any kind of ligament injury again, then you lose his bat. And I don't want to lose that bat or those wheels. Phil Nevin, the former manager of the Anaheim Angels, said, dude, you should see this guy in the outfield. He's the best outfielder I have. and he had Mike Trout on his team. So it's pretty special what Shohei Ohtani is, what he's able to accomplish on the field. And I think sometimes we just kind of take it for granted because we've seen it for so many years in a row now, but this guy is going to go down as one of, if not the greatest of all time.
Well, he is Ryan Dempster, host of Off the Mound, 2013 World Series champ, co-host of Intentional Talk and Watch Marquee at Watch Marquee, MLB Network. You can see him, hear him everywhere. Ryan, we really appreciate the time. This was great. Thank you very much for joining us.
You got it, guys. Absolutely. Keep enjoying that playoff baseball. It's the best.
There you go. Take care of yourself. Ryan Dempster here on the Press Box. All right, we've got a giveaway, as we have all week, two tickets to Iron Maiden Saturday night, this Saturday at Michelob Ultra Arena. You can get the tickets at AXS.com. But right now, we've got two tickets for you to Iron Maiden, 364-1100, 364-1100. Danny's going to take caller number six.
Now, back to the Press Box on ESPN Las Vegas.
Jason Fitz at 9 o'clock. He'll talk to you all about the Raiders. Candy's Chonies at 9:15. J.R. Starkus with his usual Thursday stopover at 9:30. We'll see what he has to stir up to drink for us this week. Let me ask you something. Does UNLV have the best defense in the Mountain West?
What alternate universe are we living in?
I know. I was just
honestly. How long has it been since we could ask a question even remotely like that?
I don't remember ever.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. But through 4 weeks, it's a legitimate argument.
They have not lost a turnover. They have not lost a turnover margin this season. Now plus eight. UNLV has 9 interceptions, one recovered fumble. I don't know. Well, we'll see this week with the Syracuse quarterback coming in, Kyle McCord, and he's passed for over 350, I think, in each game, Danny told me. So he's going to be throwing it all over the yard. I don't know if the interceptions can keep up, but he's going to give them plenty of chances. And JVT and I talked about this yesterday, and you made the best point. I just can't remember when the defense was this good. I can't remember a time when they didn't have to win 42-40 to get a victory. And, you know, even last year, the last three games, they were not good defensively at all. They gave up a lot of points, and he went out and he got kids in the portal. Those players have been great for him. The kids coming back like Woodard have been great for him. And they just seem to play defense now with an attitude, with an emotion that I haven't seen in the past years with them.
They are a team that can win multiple ways, and that's never been the case for UNLV, right? Think about that. Go back over the history of UNLV football. You're not going to find teams that you say, all right, if one side of the ball has an off week, we can still win.
Right.
And this UNLV team can. And it's just shocking to see, as someone who's watched UNLV football since 1989, that they now have everything in place. And Ed, tell me what you think about this. Given everything that went on last week around that program, can you think of a more impressive performance top to bottom than what they did against Fresno State? And I realize some of the issues that they had to deal with last week were self-created from inside the program. But the fact that they came out and they put on the kind of show that not only said this team is a contender for the Mountain West, they also said, we can survive whatever you're going to throw at us internally, to me, was as impressive as you'll ever see from a college football team.
Well, it definitely was from the time I've been watching them. There's no question about that. Responding to, and you're right, a lot of it was internal and the adversity out there last week and what happened. But that was a good old whooping of Fresno State. And sometimes, we'll see this week, because I do think Syracuse, I think the number's now 6.5, Danny. Okay, 6.5. We'll see, because Syracuse does have the good quarterback. We'll see how he plays. Sometimes, you know this well as anyone, that first game, new quarterback, emotions playing, essentially for him, you can really play well. Let's see if they can sustain it. I think they can, because that offense has so many skill players. We saw Ricky White. He's back. 10 catches, 127 yards, 2 TDs. Targeted on 12 of Haj Malik Williams' 16 pass attempts. Caught the one pass from Cam Friel, I believe, on the trick play in the fourth quarter. I think they can keep it up. Can they keep it up to that level? I think that's going to be difficult the next 3 weeks. It's actually 4 weeks. We'll see what happens at Utah State, but three of the next four, Syracuse, Oregon State, and Boise State. Oregon State's on the road. That will be a tough one. Boise State here, obviously, with the running back, is going to be tough. But I do think they can keep it up. I just think if they keep up this defensively, they've got a chance to really have a good chance to run this here if they keep it up defensively, because I think offensively they're going to score points, right, with that skill levels. I don't know if Hodge is going to be as good as he was against Fresno every week. That's going to ask a lot of him, especially on the running part of it. Led the team in rushing. What did he have? He had 12 carries, 119, and a TD. That's a lot to ask if he's also throwing the ball that much. 13 of 16 for 182, three TDs. I mean, he was terrific. So let's see if they keep it up. Like I said, that first game after adversity, you often see the best effort. Now we'll have to see against Syracuse what happens.
Yeah, and if you don't know about Kyle McCord, you just have to think about last year's Ohio State team, because that's who the quarterback was, right? Kyle McCord has thrown for an average of 364 yards per game. But let's also keep in mind, Syracuse hasn't played a game away from home yet this year. So this is going to be a challenge for them coming on the road to a nationally ranked UNLV team. And I can't believe I'm saying, again,
I know,
I'm saying so many things I believe, and things don't make sense to my little monkey brain, but they are real and they are happening, and for UNLV fans, they are spectacular.
Yeah, they are. Interested in the crowd on Friday night. Interested in the crowds as we go forward. Talking to Paul Gutierrez of ESPN yesterday, big UNLV guy, UNLV alum. His son goes there now. He said if they go undefeated against going to that boys game, that place better be packed at Allegiant Stadium.